Hello, and welcome to Nakubo in Brief, a podcast from the National Association of College and University Business Officers. On this series, we explore the opportunities and challenges facing the higher education business office. I'm Neil Gavigan, Policy and Advocacy Manager here at Nakubo, and I'm joined today by my Nakubo colleague, Ashley Jackson, our Director of Government Affairs. Ashley, thanks for taking the time to chat with me today.
Thank you, Neil, for that introduction. I'm truly excited about this conversation and the opportunity to share legislative insights as we look towards the end of 2024.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I know you have been busy and there's a lot to cover, so let's go ahead and jump in. Part of the reason that we're talking today is that you recently finished both planning and pulling off executing something that Nakubo hasn't done in a little while, a fly-in advocacy day. So not only did you lead members of Nakubo's board of directors around Capitol Hill, but you connected with dozens of House and Senate offices to plan all of the meetings. And it's a wild time in Washington. It's an election year. There have been narrow margins for legislators to work. And part of that, there's been a month-long battle over funding bills. So what was the mood like on Capitol Hill?
Certainly. Navigating Capitol Hill during such a tumultuous time with the backdrop of an election year, razor-thin legislative margins, and prolonged debates over funding was nothing short of exhilarating, I have to say. The mood was palpable. You could feel the tension and anticipation in the air as everyone seemed to be operating at a heightened level of urgency and focus leading up to the March 22nd fiscal year 24 appropriations deadline, that second deadline to that two-prong continuing resolution that happened. And amidst this backdrop, the atmosphere in the meetings with the House and Senate offices was really receptive. Despite the frenetic pace of Washington, there was a genuine willingness to listen and engage on the issues that we brought to the table. And this openness was encouraging and underscored the importance of our mission for the day.
You know, it's interesting, obviously, as we kind of talked about, a kind of a wild time to be up there when they are wrapping up FY24 appropriations. But obviously, you weren't there just to talk about the thing that they're doing at the moment. You're there to kind of drive them in the right direction. So could you tell me a bit more about the topics that drove the day and what you talked about?
Absolutely. First, the topics that drove the day were chosen because they address the immediate needs of the student population and also the long-term health of education institutions, respectively. On the appropriation side, we pushed for maximum funding in the labor HHS education bill to support education research and opposing cuts to key programs. On tax-free Pell Grants Act, we advocated for making Pell Grants tax-free for non-tuition expenses and also expanding tax credits to cover more educational costs. Additionally, we addressed concerns about hindering international collaboration and academic freedom, advocating for bipartisan improvements in the Deterrent Act. And last but not least, we highlighted the negative impact on low-income students, loss of essential aid programs, and concerns over student aid and accountability in the College Cost Reduction Act. Specifically on CCRA, we've taken a strong stance on the preservation of the Federal Supplemental Educational Opportunity Grants, also known as the FSEOG program, which is critical and provides over $1.4 billion in aid to more than 1.8 million students with exceptional financial need in fiscal years 2020 and 2021 alone. And in that, we argued that eliminating or reducing the program under the CCRA would deprive low-income students of vital last dollar support, exacerbating the financial challenges they face and potentially limiting their access to higher education. So our advocacy here focused on reinforcing the importance of FSEOG as a cornerstone of federal student aid, essential for maintaining equitable access to education and ensuring that all students, regardless of their financial situation, have the opportunity to pursue and succeed in higher education, which goes to the mission of our institutions.
Well, that sounds great, Ashley. Obviously, supporting students and the institutions that serve them is so important and part of the mission here at Nakubo. And I'm curious, with the meetings, were they kind of tailored based on who you were talking to? Obviously, legislators serve on different committees, have different areas of interest. How did you approach that with the different groups and different meetings?
You're absolutely right there. So there's committees of jurisdiction for all the issues that I highlighted previously, and they involve a mix of budgetary, educational, and financial committees. Due to the nature of the legislation and the subjects that they cover, for appropriations, the labor HHS education bill, that's the House Committee on Appropriations, specifically the Subcommittee on Labor, Health, and Human Services, Education and Related Agencies. And on the Senate side, similarly, the Subcommittee on Labor, Health, and Human Services, Education and Related Agencies is responsible there for the appropriations pieces that I spoke about before. And those subcommittees oversee funding for departments and programs within their purview, which include, again, education, health, and human services. And for us specifically, education. It's on the Tax-Free Pell Grants Act, that would be the House Committee on Ways and Means, which has jurisdiction over tax policy and therefore would address the tax-free status of Pell Grants. And then on the Senate side, the Senate Committee on Finance, and that committee has jurisdiction over taxation and revenue, which also affects the status of educational grants. On the College Cost Reduction Act, and that is concerns over student aid and accountability, that would be the House Committee on Education and Labor, which oversees all education and workforce development, including student loans and financial aid programs. And then on the Senate side, a Senate Committee on Health, Education and Labor and Pensions, or the HELP Committee, that has broad jurisdiction over education and the other education, labor, and pensions as well, including oversight of student financial aid programs.
What that kind of gets at is something that, you know, we know about Congress, which is that obviously elected officials, they come from different backgrounds, they have different interests. And, you know, I know you and I both know that regardless of what you go to Capitol Hill to do and how finely you hone your talking points and how much preparation you do, sometimes legislators or their staffs might steer the conversation in a direction that you didn't expect, maybe you didn't want. Sometimes it's for the better and sometimes maybe it's not. But I'm curious, were there any surprises or maybe recurring themes in the different meetings?
So in preparation for this with the board for Advocacy Day and our Advocacy 101 sessions and subsequent talks with the board, I did mention that, and also the staff liaisons, I mentioned that endowments may come up, anti-Semitism, free speech. I think the surprise for me there was I prepped everyone for those things, but they didn't come up at all.
Wow, yeah, that is surprising.
Right. So that was the surprise there. But one recurring theme that was outside of our topics that drove the day was that a lot of members of Congress and their staff mentioned the FAFSA issue and asked our thoughts on the implementation process and really expressed their disappointment in the Department of Education's implementation of the new FAFSA simplification rules. And then another, of course, was around appropriations. The Advocacy Day happened on March 20th, that March 22nd deadline was looming, and I believe that it wasn't officially signed until March 23rd. But that was all palpable. All of that was very palpable, and appropriations was on top of mind as well.
It's interesting that the FAFSA issue came up, even though, you know, as you kind of illustrated, it's out of the hands of these legislators, and it's obviously not in the hands of our business officers on how to fix this. So I know that there's been interest from the Hill, you know, including a letter, I think, that a group from really across the House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, signed off on, trying to hold Ed accountable for some of the struggles that this is causing students, families, and institutions. So it makes sense that that would be one that folks would want to talk about.
Absolutely. And all the work that was done across the aisle on FAFSA simplification with both chambers, House and Senate, and working bipartisanship to get that FAFSA simplification legislation off the ground and then to throw it to the Department of Education, and the implementation process has been lacking. That was definitely made known. Several offices on the Hill. So.
Well, that's good to hear. So you mentioned that appropriations was one of the main issues during the Advocacy Day. And obviously we know that funding has been such a challenge for legislators since the beginning of the fiscal year on October 1st, 2023. so much so that it even claimed the job of Kevin McCarthy, the former Speaker of the House, who had to kind of succumb to his party once infighting, you know, kind of reached that level. Do you have any sense for how the FY25 appropriations process is beginning to come together? Is that work already underway?
I'll just take a step back. So this year's appropriations, well, the FY25 appropriations process got off to a later start than usual. And that was delayed by the fiscal year 24 budgeting saga that stretched over 6 months, as you mentioned. Right. So despite this, President Biden made his intentions clear in his State of the Union address on March 7th, particularly focusing on making higher education more affordable and accessible. And in that, he championed a notable increase in Pell Grants, aiming to bridge the gap for middle-income families with the largest boost seen in over a decade. However, his ambitious proposal for a further increase in FY 2024 faced those major setbacks as well. But President Biden isn't stopping at grants there. His vision really extends to making community college free. And that was a key part of his Build Back Better plan a couple of years ago. And that despite hitting a roadblock hasn't dampened his commitment to education. This includes substantial investments in HBCUs and also MSIs, and that totaling over $7 billion. On the student loan front, Biden's pushing for major reforms, including a new repayment plan and efforts toward debt cancellation. And although a comprehensive cancellation was halted by the Supreme Court, there's movement towards forgiving loans for specific groups of borrowers, with a final rule expected here in November. And then also in the State of the Union, Biden emphasized the importance of alternatives to traditional four-year degrees, pointing to the CHIPS and Science Act as the creator of thousands of good-paying jobs that don't require a college education. And yet the debate over college costs and how to tackle them remains heated. It's also bipartisan. Proposals here vary widely from, again, increasing Pell Grants to more radical student debt cancellation plans, showing a clear divide in how to address the affordability crisis. Despite these differences, I think there's a glimmer of bipartisan support for sure on both sides, expanding Pell Grants to shorter career training programs. And then on March 11th, Biden unveiled his fiscal year 2025 budget proposal, which is a $7.3 trillion vision for the next fiscal year, which signals a strong focus again on education with a proposed $3.1 billion increase for the Department of Education. And in this budget, he outlined significant moves to reduce college costs again, including increasing the Pell Grant, eliminating loan origination fees, and further supporting community colleges and under-resourced institutions. And this also includes substantial investments in research and health through agencies like the National Science Foundation, and also the National Institutes of Health. And again, this is a common theme that we've seen since the beginning of his presidency and all of his State of the Union addresses and then subsequent fiscal year budget requests, is always a dedication to these core principles for higher education. And as we dive into the specifics, from boosting the Office of Federal Student Aid's budget to proposing substantial increases for science and research funding, it is clear Biden's blueprint for the next fiscal year is ambitious. But as always, it's over to Congress to turn these plans into a reality. And it's important to mention that although the president puts out the budget request, it is simply just a request, and Congress does not have to include any or all of these things,
right,
when they're drafting their appropriations bills. And so on the FY25 process, there are some heavy hurdles to get over. There's even talk of ousting Speaker Johnson, similarly to what happened with Speaker McCarthy, due to the party being less than thrilled about how the final fiscal year 24 appropriations negotiation shaped up. So it's really now up to Congress. It's in their hands. I know a number of offices are asking for any appropriations requests from stakeholder groups, and that's not just for in the higher education space, that spans for transportation and other groups as well.
Wow, there's obviously so much there.
Yes.
where to start? So you mentioned some of the things about post-election, or at least post this fiscal year, but before we jump ahead, I'm curious to hear, you know, outside of appropriations and some of the issues swirling there, are there any other specific things that Congress has to do or wants to do, do you think, before you know, the end of the year, end of the fiscal year during the summer?
Yeah, there's a lot there. So first up, now that they've cleared the appropriations, the FY24 appropriations process, they've got to get to the Federal Aviation Administration reauthorization. That deadline originally was March 8th and was extended again to May 10th. So that's something that has to get done. And then there's the Farm Bill, which is the cornerstone of the American agriculture policy. The FY24 continuing resolution extended the Farm Bill for 1 year, and that new deadline is September 30th. And then, of course, we can't forget the FY25 appropriations process, which also needs to be completed by September 30th. And again, the common theme here, we just finished the fiscal year 24 appropriations process. Then as the year winds down, there's the National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA, with a deadline of December 31st. And all of these deadlines represents a significant challenge, which requires a careful negotiation. And also by, quite frankly, bipartisan cooperation. And with those razor thin margins, Congress has a lot of work ahead of them. And not to mention, with all of these deadlines, we have the November elections coming up right as well. And Congress, of course, Congress will adjourn and go back to their states to campaign. So is there enough time to get all these things done? Will they punt some of these things?
I think we'd all love to hear if there is. Get out the crystal ball, huh?
Exactly. The question is, will Congress work together to get these must-pass pieces of legislation off their desk, or will they punt it again to the next Congress? I can imagine there'll be some politics involved in there with election monitoring and kind of speculating who's going to be in charge, really.
Yeah, of course. And I know, of course, you and I, along with a lot of other folks in Washington, are going to be keeping a close eye on those things as they happen or do not happen over the next few months. But then, you know, I did want to look ahead as well, because, you know, we kind of teed this up a bit earlier. Obviously, it's an election year, which means that we are going to be swearing in a whole lot of new congressmen and potentially a new president come January. And I'm curious what you think might come next year, beginning January. Do you have any sense for legislative priorities for the next year, what we might see? I know we can come back to this as we get closer, but I'd love to hear the early take on this.
Early take, it really depends, again, with all of the pieces of must-pass legislation that this year, what Congress does with it. If there's a continuing resolution for FY25, and they push that through December, that is another hurdle. Do they do a two-pronged approach like they did with this appropriations process? Do they extend FAA again? Do they get the Farm Bill done? Those are all things that are implications of what we could possibly see in January. Then we know at the end of 2025, the TCJA expires.
That's the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of
2025. Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that expires at the end of 2025. So do I think that we'll get to that? I can see an extension of that, of TCJA happening. There may be a slight chance that some of those issues that are important to institutions of higher education are repealed or reformed. I don't think reform will be the way to go. I think some things can be repealed, but that's still to be seen. I think we'll have a divided government. And then we're also dealing with the tax reform, the debt limit, all happening in 2025, once the new Congress is sworn in. So I have to get all of those things done.
Yeah, that.
And not to mention, if they don't get all the things done, that needs to happen this year. So it'll be really important for our members, our member institutions and business officers to stay involved in the process, talk to your legislators and engage in the process to ensure that they have on top of mind what's on top of your mind and what you would like to see.
Absolutely.
Happen in this next Congress.
Absolutely. And I want to get back to something you kind of referenced a bit with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. One issue that was especially pertinent to higher education, of course, was the excise tax on endowments, commonly known as the endowment tax, right? We've seen, of course, recently proposals that would kind of use that tax or use those schools to, you know, place new burdens on some schools and in a sense kind of bifurcate higher education. An initial proposal with the bipartisan Pell Grant Expansion Act, the Workforce Pell Act, comes to mind, where they would eliminate access to federal student aid for those schools. And I think it's just a fascinating kind of wrinkle from that TCJA tax that we're still seeing legislators kind of use it or think of using it in new and, we'll say, creative ways.
Institutions of higher education are in the hot seat right now. I think we'll continue to see bills like Workforce Pill, bills related to endowment tax. But I think that they are message bills. I don't think that they'll move this Congress. There's always a possibility of them being introduced, but as polarized as Congress is, those razor thin margins, those bills aren't going anywhere. They're message bills. And that's why it's always important for our members to continue to engage with their legislators and talk about these issues and the impact, not only that it has on institutions, but really making it a student focus, how those bills impact students and the delivery of their missions to their students.
Yeah, well, it'll be fascinating to see how these margins look come next year, and see what some of this stuff looks like. But I totally agree with what you're saying about it really ultimately being about students and institutions serving the students, which are, you know, paramount. Anything else? Any other thoughts that you'd like to leave the listeners with before we conclude?
Continue to keep your eye on the ball. Nakubo is always here with our fingers to the pulse of what Congress is up to, and just continue to engage with your legislators and really drive those key points home about what your institutions are doing in support of students.
Yeah, and I know you did a webinar not long ago. We'll absolutely put that in the show notes. That was kind of an advocacy 101, right? Kind of gave people an insight on what to do.
Yep. Advocacy 101. That was a great webinar. And it's really invaluable and it will stand the test of time, I think, for years to come. And it's really just telling your story, your institution's story was a key point of that Advocacy 101 webinar. So I do encourage you all to take a listen, and then always engage with me, Neil, and the advocacy team if you have any questions on anything that's happening in Congress.
Yeah. Well, and of course, we're going to keep reporting out, and yeah, we'll be doing this all year. Well, thank you so much, Ashley. Like I said, thanks for taking the time. It was wonderful to talk to you about this stuff and share it with listeners. And thank you all for listening. Nakubo Brief is available on your favorite podcast platform, and you can find this episode along with the resources we mentioned, including that fantastic webcast, at nakubo.org.